Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Oh, it's such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles, plus a free professional measure and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Do you believe you are wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Donnie, we've already had a false start. I was hoping to open with
an
Tomlin's.
Illegal shift.
I was hoping to open with Tomlin's unleash all remark from December of 2009, the keyword being open, which is why I sent you and Limits a text saying, and I
we
quote,
"We will not go gently. We're going to unleash hell here in December. Because we have to. We won't go in the shell. We're going to go in attack mode.
We won't go in the shell.
Because that's what's required.
We won't go in the shell." You know what happened 2 weeks later? Bruce Gradkowski, no offense to him, lit them up for 21 fourth quarter points, Donnie. But thank you, Limits, and Happy New Year to both of you gentlemen.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Joe.
Yeah, well, a lot of things ahead for you two, especially. You're on your way up in this business. It's going to be very interesting to see where your careers go over the next year, two, three. But it's going to be more interesting to see where this Steelers season goes. And Donnie, and welcome all to a Donnie Football Friday, I might add. It's come to this, Donnie. I have lots of thoughts today. One of them is that if the Bengals beat the Steelers tomorrow night, do you realize that they will finish one game apart in the standings and that the difference between second and third place for the Steelers in the division would have been that game in Cincy? That's what we've come to.
Barely over a month ago, like 33 days ago,
man,
December 1st.
When that game happened, it was Tomlin's coach of the year. This thing is for real. And I was on that bandwagon to a certain degree. You know, I still think that the real point I've been making all year is that I think that this Steelers team has a better chance to win a playoff game, to be a threat than previous Steeler teams. But I'll admit, after these three games in 11 days, I'm wavering on that in a big way. I've been knocked for a loop here. But I open with this, Donnie. And Limits, please weigh in as you see fit. I'm happy to be back on the radio. It's been a while. Do you have any of those cookies with Oreos in them today? Any extras?
How were those, though?
You don't have to ask that question.
You guys go through those pretty quickly?
They were gone in 2 days.
Your lovely girlfriend makes chocolate chip cookies where you can't see from the outside that there's an Oreo inside the chocolate chip cookie, Donnie. You know this already. I'm not telling you anything you don't know.
Yeah, I think she should send that in to like the folks at Oakmont or something.
No extras? You couldn't bring in some extras? Are they all gone? Did you eat them all?
Yeah. I mean, well, like we disperse them throughout various parties, so.
I bet, including in here, which was very generous of you. Is this going to be the Steelers' worst collapse under Tomlin? Let's just open with a question. We've got so much to talk about here on a Donnie Football Friday. JP Roofing and Siding, bringing you the top of the show here off the top. Let me just go over these and we can rank them. Limits, you game for this?
Let's do it.
You look spry in the new year today. What's your New Year's resolution?
That's a good question, Joe.
to get rid of me, perhaps?
No,
Donnie,
Joe, I love you.
If you don't have one on the top of your head, then you don't have one. And I don't either. except maybe to eat less sugar and try to lose some weight. But that's mine every year. And the first thing I do on my first show of the new year is ask you about the chocolate chip cookies with Oreos in them. What's yours, Donnie?
So I feel like for everybody, I mean, I guess Limits would be the odd man out because he's probably somebody who should have the goal of gaining weight
in
the
right
new year.
About that.
Normally
yes.
It's lose weight for everybody else.
Yes.
And even though I went through a nice transformation over the last couple of years, I think you're always trying to lose a little bit more.
Yeah.
Speaking of those cookies, though, I'm doing something this year. I want to do something this year where I give up something different each month. So I'm doing no sweets in January.
I like that.
Yeah.
My wife is doing no alcohol in January.
The dry January.
Yeah. I'll see if I can test her on that one just by my behavior.
Well, you've
at home,
been going dry for quite some time.
Yeah.
You're in good shape.
Yeah. I'm drier than the Sahara. But she, because of me, I think, likes to drink wine and no alcohol in January, but a different one every. So your resolution is to make a resolution every month. This is borderline genius, Limits.
That's very good, because I try not to make like a full year-on resolution. I try to think of things like during the year to, you know, I want to be better at this, not put a timeline on it that it has to be like at the start of the year. I do want to go to the gym more. And now that a buddy of mine is back from Erie, where he was up there for school and lived there for a couple of years, and he's like the guy that basically says, like, we're going to the gym and drags me there.
You know what,
I think
Limits?
I'm going to have a more successful time going to the gym.
You and I could combine on that, and I'll tell you how. The Green Tree Sportsplex we could walk to.
It is very nice. If neither of you have
been there multiple times.
Room.
It's awesome. We should play some volleyball there, too.
We could do that, and we could join the club and go there for a half hour. That's it. Before or after work, and commit ourselves to it.
You know, we also have a gym in the building, Joe.
Yeah,
across the street.
Yeah, it's like down the street. Yeah, that's actually what I first thought
for
you
free?
Were talking about. Yeah, if
what?
You just have your little card, like the card you get in our door with, you
Holy
can go
horse
to the
follicles. Yeah,
we should start going
like,
to that.
It's like the Foster Plaza gym. It's right down the.
But
the
we
hill.
Also have hoops over at Green Tree.
Yeah, I didn't factor that in.
You and I can factor in lots of basketball, volleyball, workouts.
Donnie, do you see our basketball game that we played, Joe and I?
Did you guys post the whole game or just
the
highlight
coming
of
out with
Joe
the video?
Hitting the shot?
I thought it was supposed to be today, but I will check in.
Because Limits beat me 17-16 in overtime.
I saw the highlight of your you know, step
Follow
back.
Away. Yeah, nice, huh?
And yeah, I mean, I showed my dad. You guys, like I've said, are around the same age. Very impressed.
Thank you, sir. You should see the shots I made when we had Jalen Lowe and Biba Cummings. You should see the shots. I had those guys calling me the GOAT.
We teamed up.
Like Bob Cousy.
Jalen Lowe was like, man, Joe's the GOAT.
I made a shot, Donnie. I'm not going to give it away now. It was a trick shot in a game of horse. We're all trying to avoid the subject here because it's depressing. The Steelers are in the midst of a collapse. Would this be the worst one, Donnie? I'll go over the top four here because so many collapses, so little time, right? This year, it would be, if they lose out, it would be five losses in a row, beginning with three lopsided losses in 11 days and blowing a two-game lead in the AFC North to begin December, okay? 2020, they opened 11-0. And somehow wound up a three seed. They lost five of their final six, including maybe the worst playoff loss in franchise history, getting embarrassed at home by giving up 48 points to the fighting Baker Mayfields, who didn't even have their coach on the sidelines, and some guy named Frank showed up in their huddle before the game. 2018, the Steelers were 7-2-1 after 10 games. With a 2.5-game lead on the Ravens, who were 5-5, they blew that. They didn't win the division. They missed the playoffs by losing 4 of 6 to end the season, including one in Oakland. And oh yeah, Mr. Big Chess quit to sort of punctuate that collapse. Okay, you guys keeping track here? 2009, which lent the wonderful quote, if you could call it up again. Why don't we do that? Because going into this, the Steelers were just starting to slide a little after a 6-2 start when Mike Tomlin stepped to the podium.
Go gently. We're going to unleash hell here in December because we have to. We won't go into shell. We're going to go in attack mode because that's what's required.
Instead, they were attacked, Donnie. After starting 6-2, they lost 5 in a row and missed the playoffs, including horrifying losses to the Chiefs back when the Chiefs were really bad, and the Raiders when Gradkowski had those 21 points in the fourth quarter. And they ended that streak by losing in Cleveland on a Thursday night to Brady Blanken-Quinn, who went 6-19. Does that ring a bell from this year? They went into Cleveland on a Thursday night and lost to Brady Quinn, who went 6-19. They lost that game 13-6. Obviously, they didn't make the playoffs. If either one of you can guess in the next 5 seconds who ran for the Browns' only touchdown that night, Donnie, I already owe you a dinner. I'll treat you to a steak dinner. Who ran for the Browns' the only touchdown of the game that night in a windstorm where Bruce Arians thought it was a good idea to throw 40 passes in a windstorm in Cleveland? Who ran for the Browns' touchdown? Either one of you?
I'll give Limits the first guess.
Josh Cribbs on a jet sweep?
Good guess, but no.
I'm going to go Ruben Drones.
No. I'll give you each another guess if you want it. Do you want another guess, Donnie? You're very good at this.
Jamal Lewis wouldn't have still been there.
I don't know. I don't know if he was.
Yeah, he popped into my mind, too. I feel like it would be too obvious to say Peyton Hillis.
Chris Jennings ran for the touchdown. I don't even remember who he was. Do you?
I have no idea who he is.
He had 71 yards that night. All right, so make your pick. If the Steelers lose out here, or even if they beat Cincinnati and lose the first playoff game, that's still a major collapse. They've lost the division, basically, which is already a collapse. But if they don't win a playoff game here, and especially if they just lose right out, Donnie, where does this rank among the four worst Tomlin collapses?
So I don't have it at one or two. I mean, I think you could argue that it's at three or four, but I think it's actually in the bottom half there, because that 09 one is so memorable. It was coming off their Super Bowl win in 43, and like you said, they start 6-0 and they get that sixth win on Monday Night Football, a national audience against the Broncos, who were also a good team at the time, and they win convincingly 28-10 in that game. I also think it is fair, and I don't like using excuses for this current team, because I think the whole 3 games in 11 days and, you know, the opponents they've played, I think that's been used ad nauseum by people. But I do think it is fair when you're comparing the collapses to look at who they've lost to in the stretch.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, they had the Thursday night loss to the Browns in the snow, but they've also
lost. There's no but there, Donnie. They lost to the Browns on a Thursday night in the snow, much like they did back in 09. You were giving them a free pass that game, and that's the game that's going to prevent them from winning the division.
Well, they also have gone into this stretch and have just gotten bodied by the three teams that people thought they could maybe stack up with.
You're not giving them a free pass for that, are you?
No.
Okay.
No, because they wanted to be seen as Super Bowl contenders, and they've been shown the door 3 times by real Super Bowl contenders. But I do think it's fair when to compare collapses here. Like, that 09 team lost to some brutally bad teams.
I do
not
agree
just
with you
one.
There. Yeah.
Where this team lost to the Browns. They lost to multiple bad teams.
So you're picking 09?
09's the top dog for me. Top dog, get your top dollar, Joe. And that 09 one is the ultimate collapse. I think 18 comes after that. I also think the fact that they missed the playoffs in both of those years does play a factor when they were pretty safely in a spot until they started to completely crater.
Limitless wonder.
Well, Tomlin said earlier this year that the decisions that he makes is why he's well compensated. He was not getting top dollar for that 09 season, so that's why I have to go with it as well. Even though the 2020 season sticks in my mind so much, I can't pick it as the top one because of just the oddity of it. No fans in the stands. Just the weird nature of how they ended the season. And starting off 11-0, where we all kind of thought it was a fluke, that would probably be 2 for me. The 09 collapse unleashing hell in December is just too memorable to not put it 1.
Man, there's one thing that jumps in here, and that is that Ben missed a game in 09 in the midst of that collapse in Baltimore with an injury, you'll remember.
Was that when Dennis Dixon started?
I think Dennis Dixon started. He was injured the week before against Kansas City, if you remember. And in Baltimore, it was Dennis Dixon. He was 12 of 26 that night. So a compromise, Ben, actually takes me out of that equation. First of all, they lost to a good Bengals team that won the division that year. You remember the and Andy Dalton came in here in 09 and won? And then they lose to Kansas City. Horrible loss, but Ben injured. Then he misses the Baltimore game. That doesn't excuse the next two, but I feel like he was compromised a little bit back then, which is why I'm going with 2018. You have a 2.5-game lead in the division in December, and you lose the division? Or at least after 10 games. I don't know if it was officially December. And then AB quits, and you lose a game in Oakland. That's number one for me. But this one's in those four for sure. And if they lose out, man, when you go from he's coach of the year, this is the, one of the surprise teams of the year, the division's wrapped, they're for real, to losing to maybe the Texans in the first round of the playoffs, that's a steep fall. And by the way, if it did play out that way, since the 2010 season when the Steelers went to the Super Bowl, if the Texans beat them in a playoff game, they would have doubled the Steelers' playoff wins since that year, 6-3. The Houston blanking Texans would have double the number of playoff wins since 2010 than the Pittsburgh Steelers. So that kind of gets back to, for me, Tomlin did A-plus work, Donnie, in his first 5 years here. Since then, it's about a C-plus. But it does now get to the second question I have for you, fine gentlemen. If they merely win a playoff game, is that the difference between a successful season and an unsuccessful season?
So we had this discussion yesterday, and I don't know if you'll view this as a cop-out of an answer. I do think it depends who they run into in that wild card round. If the Steelers end up playing the Texans, who have been on, kind of on a similar path this year, like not looking very good. They're a benefit of a bad division.
Yeah.
So they're going to host a playoff game. If the Steelers go in there and win a game like 16-13 and then they get drubbed in the next round, then absolutely not. But let's
what
say,
if they just lose and don't get drubbed? What if they lose in overtime? You're putting a lot of qualifiers on this.
Wait, Donnie. Are you saying they lose to the Texans?
Yeah, you said if they get drubbed by the Texans. What if they lose a really good game?
No, I'm saying if they like beat the Texans, and they get drubbed in the next round, won't be satisfied. Because the Texans have been a team that have been going downhill for the back half of this season.
Okay.
But if they go into Baltimore and they win a playoff game, I think that changes the equation a little bit. I mean, wouldn't it for you? I mean, they went in there a few weeks ago.
I don't know about this limits. Donnie's putting 18 qualifiers on this. If they beat the Texans and then get drubbed, well, what if they beat the Texans and then lose a great game to the Bills in triple in overtime?
I'd be satisfied with that.
What if they
can step toe to toe with one of the true elites of the AFC, even in a loss at any point in the playoffs, I would actually be satisfied.
But if they get drubbed by the Bills, you wouldn't be.
No,
there's too many qualifiers on this, Donnie, for me. If they win a playoff game by any stretch against any opponent, by any means necessary, this season is a success. If they lose in the first round of the playoffs, the season is a failure. I've got a report card in front of me. Yeah, the exam would be tougher, so study harder. And also realize that that's a Ravens team that you've beaten, what, 8 out of 10 times, 8 out of 11 now? Mm-hmm. And that you had in a very precarious position, even in Baltimore, even in Lamar's maybe his greatest season. He's only been intercepted 4 times this year. Guess who has 2 of them? The Steelers. Yep. And they had that one, and then Russell gave the game away with a horrible interception. So for me, for Donnie, what was your answer, Donnie? It depends on the opponent.
Yes, because if they simply just beat the Texans in like an ugly game and then get killed in the next round, yeah, then I don't know how much satisfaction you take from that. But if they would go into Baltimore and win, and then no matter what happens after that, but if they would beat a team like Baltimore in the first round, I think that's pretty satisfactory.
And even lose by get killed the next week.
Yeah, because it would at least show that they're stepping up against probably the third best team in the AFC. Well, yeah, the third best team in the AFC.
All right, you're probably, you know, more sensible and logical than me, but you're splitting hairs. Yeah. I'm saying a playoff win's a successful year. They've been starved for it. You can no longer say that TJ Watt doesn't even have one of those in his career. To me, that makes for a successful season. I compare it to Penn State right now. You still have people, they still have to beat a really good team in these playoffs to make sure Franklin, you know, deserves to come back. They're in the Final Four. Come on. They just beat two teams.
Right.
They went in and hammered that kid who's a great running back. I know he had 100 yards, but he had like 35 carries to get there, 30, whatever. They played, they're among the last four teams standing in the country. I don't care about the details. Give me a Steeler playoff win. I don't care about the details. It's a successful year. Give me a Steelers playoff loss in the first round on wild card weekend again, and it's a failure.
See, I'm with Donnie on this because I harp back to the fact that they were one game away, just one game, from winning the division. You take care of business in Baltimore, you would have won the division, and the rest, I think, would have been just numb and void. Just throw it out the window. You lose to the Chiefs, you lose to Cincinnati, whatever. But if they go to Houston and they win a slugfest, okay, great. Finally, TJ Watt gets a playoff game and gets just crushed in Buffalo or Kansas City. I feel like the expectations have been lowered so substantially that we're talking about just one playoff win against a Houston team that might be 9-8 going into it after already losing the division, losing three out of four games going into the playoffs. That's what's going to stick in my mind more so than winning a playoff game.
The theme of this season on this station is suddenly free passes again, Donnie. What are we doing
here?
What
free passes am I giving?
If they go into the second round and just play a good game?
No, if they go into the second round and get blown out, then I think
if they just go in and play a good game in the second round and lose, then you give them a success. Of course, I'm giving them a successful season just for beating the Texans.
Yes. Yeah.
Maybe I'm giving out the free pass here.
Well, I don't think
I've been sucked into the pony free pass theme.
I've never thought all year that they could beat Buffalo in the playoffs. That was the one team that stood out to me that they weren't going to beat. And the way that Kansas City came in and destroyed them at home on Christmas Day, I don't think they can go to Kansas City and win.
I'm just surprised. I don't really care about Houston's record at this point. I'm surprised that going into Houston and winning a playoff game would not make for a successful season for you guys. That's what surprises me.
To what Austin just said, though, I hate how watered down our expectations have become.
I agree with that,
because
they have been.
I understand. It's been nearly a decade since they have won a playoff game.
No, Donnie, here's the way to look at this. I think you and I have talked about this. Your first conscious memory was at what age? 5 or 6?
Yeah.
Let's say 6.
Yeah.
So combine that with if they don't win a playoff game this year, and you have kids who are going to be freshmen in high school next year, thousands upon thousands of kids in Steeler Nation who would go into their freshman year of high school with no conscious memory of the Steelers winning a playoff game. But go ahead.
I actually think that's a really good point, because I've thought about also what since the Steelers last got back to a Super Bowl, if you count baseball wild card wins.
Those kids are getting Social Security by now for a Super Bowl.
The Steelers and Pirates have the same amount of playoff wins.
You're right about that.
Very true.
Since the Steelers' last playoff or last Super Bowl appearance.
Joe, I was a sophomore in high school.
And the Houston Texans have two more than the Steelers. You were a sophomore in high school?
The last time that they won a playoff game. I was a sophomore in high school.
And then there's the fact that there's three playoff wins. If they don't win one this year, it would be 3 in 14 years. 3 in 14 years. And in 12 of those seasons, there would be none. And the three quarterbacks they would have beaten would be A.J. McCarron, Matt Moore, and Alex Smith. I mean, it's mind-boggling, the national media narrative of Tomlin being a great, like, legendary coach. He's a good coach. He hasn't been a great coach in a long time. Long time. Just ask the kids that are headed to high school and have never seen him standing on the sideline for a playoff win. I mean, you can't say that and then say, oh, but he is a great coach. Those two statements don't jibe.
And this will fuel the fire for the people on the other side, too, if they do continue to crater, if they completely crash and burn. not for the people that predicted them to finish below 500, but I think they'll be close enough to it. Like, oh, okay, well, they started 10-3. Everybody in the pro Mike Tomlin camp, pro Steelers camp, was everything's hunky-dory. You know, they're all getting their jollies now, but they finished 10-8. Like, you might as well have finished below 500 because you ruined your season. It completely blew up on you.
You're once again in the last place you want to be, which is where they're not renting in this place. They've bought a house in the mediocre middle. And that's the last place you want to be in pro sports. And it's so, I don't know if the word's ironic, but this franchise in particular, not to mention the other one in town that's won recent championships, the Penguins, are two of the glowing examples in the history. And the glasses come off for this one, Donnie. In the maybe this is a Grandpa Joe story time with Grandpa Joe. Could that be?
I'll pull up a chair right next to the fire.
A little cup of hot cocoa with miniature. Do we agree on the miniature marshmallows, Donnie, and not the big ones?
I think we did, yeah.
Yeah. They melt easier? Is that the key?
They definitely would, yeah.
Yeah. In the history of sports, two of the glowing examples of what tanking, intentionally or unintentionally, can mean to a franchise and is by far preferable to living in the middle for year after year after year are the Steelers and the Penguins. The Steelers' dynasty of the 70s was born of sucking. It was born of being able to draft Terry Bradshaw and Franco Harris. And then they started to get good. And then the 74 draft was just brilliance more than, hey, you know, we stink, so we have a bunch of high picks. But the quarterback and the guy that people say changed it as much as anybody, and Joe Green, the guy that started it all, were products of stinking. And you know who else was? And here's the great irony of, and let me make sure I phrase this properly. It's not an, is it an 18-year winning streak? No, it's an 18-year non-losing streak. That's always the first graphic they show. And I have to say two things. One is that the great irony of that is that the legendary non-losing streak was born of a losing season. Ben Roethlisberger is the person most responsible for that non-losing streak, and they had to go 6-10 to have a shot at him. That's number one. Number two, I'm pretty sure, especially if they lose this year, that the more impressive streak, in quotes, impressive, meaning makes an impression on you, is 8 years without a playoff win. And by the way, if they get blown out in the first round, it'll be 8 years without coming close to a playoff win, which I think is an important qualifier, just like non-losing is an important qualifier on that other streak that everybody talks about. So this living in the middle and finishing 10-8 or whatever it would be, Donnie, I mean, it seems to be good enough for Art. It seems to be good enough for him because he keeps extending Tomlin by multiple years.
I brought up a point to a caller last night, and it was something that I said last year that got a lot of people fired up because based on how the teams finish every year, it's very easy to jump all over me for this. But I've said before that we get on the owner of the baseball team, Bob Nutting, in this town. I don't think he and Art Rooney are all that much different as owners. I think one of them just inherited an incredibly better situation than the other. How much better have the Steelers gotten?
But there's a very important distinction here, Donnie, that in one, the issue is simply spending. In the other, you have a salary cap sport. So
I get that.
The crux of all the Bob Nutting criticism, if you asked, you know, a million Pirates fans, what's your main problem with Bob Nutting? In a word, they would say spending, or they may use another word.
I get that. I mean, the GM also doesn't do anything, for the record. He's made one move, I think, this offseason.
Yeah.
But the team has reached a point where that standard they talk about has gone like this in a downward slope, and they're seemingly okay with oh, well, you know, we made the playoffs. You know, we ran the football pretty well. We had a 1,000-yard rusher again. You know, I do hear that.
But at least the standard for the Steelers would be, let's get to the playoffs and lose in the first round. For the Pirates, it's let's finish at the bottom of the league. And there, and by the way, a further indictment, the Pirates can't do what the Steelers of the 70s did and what they did by drafting Ben and what the Penguins did by tanking twice and then winning cups. They can't even turn that into winning. They can't even turn tanking into making the right draft picks, Henry Davis, and turning that into winning. But anyway, 412-928-9370. My final question for you nice young gentlemen here, as I put my glasses back on, Donnie, did you bring us lunch today? Or
I only brought myself lunch today. That's all I had.
What are you having?
Well, I had a doctor's appointment this morning, so some chicken parm left over.
Look at this. I have chicken parm over Alfredo, and I'm willing to share this with you, Limits.
Oh, Joe, that would be incredible.
Yeah, I'll split that with
but
you.
But only if you're willing. I'm not going to ask.
I just said I was willing.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Should the Steelers rest their starters if the Ravens win?
No. No, because this is it's a different position than I feel we've seen them rest starters in the past.
May I add something quickly before you go into this?
Go ahead.
Back to my other point. Winning against the Texans, but this Tomlin is a great legendary coach or just a good coach. Beating the Texans in a first-round playoff game would not make him a great coach again. I don't want anybody to get confused on that. But for me, it would mean the difference between a successful an unsuccessful season. But now the question is, should he rest starters if they beat or if the Ravens win earlier in the day and thus clinch the division? Donnie,
no, I think you should only be in a position to rest players if you are truly locked into your spot. If the Ravens were to win that game and we knew the Steelers would be the five or the six, they couldn't go up or down no matter what happened against Cincinnati, then rest them. But if they win the game, they get a much more favorable matchup in the first round of the playoffs.
Yeah.
I think you absolutely try to win the football game. Do not rest people. I understand the health point of things. You also want to right the ship a little bit here. If you can have a nice game, you can win. Your offense can put up points against a bad defense. You can have the vibes feeling a little bit better than, hey, we just got bludgeoned again by Cincinnati, by the way, and now we're going to Baltimore. So, but don't worry, because the guy that was on the shelf, Dante Jackson, with his bad back, he's good to go.
Now, I said health over home game down the stretch here, and they sort of split the difference here. They've been playing some hurt guys. They've been resting people, like in the Philly game. They haven't really, I don't think, taken one tack or the other. Health over home game was one thing. I'm not sure that applies in a case of health over favored opponent. And there's a huge difference here, Donnie, in who you can play. And if the Steelers lose, they're in danger of playing the Ravens, correct?
Yeah, and I do not like the going into all of this, I gave them – now I know they can't do this because of how things worked out last week, luckily – but going into the last few weeks, I gave them zero chance in Buffalo or Kansas City, slim chance in Baltimore, and a favorable one in Houston. Yeah. I think as of today, I would pick them to win a game in Houston.
There's a huge difference here, so I would play guys.
Yeah, exactly.
Except I would still use the same criterion I've been using. The same rules apply for me. If you'd play in a normal game, you play in this game. I'm not just, resting starters all over the place for the sake of saving them. But for those who are already banged up, if you could play in a normal game, you play. If this is like you could only play in a do or die game, then you sit. For me, I don't think it's that. I wouldn't get to that point with it where I'm risking already injured guys. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and we can't call this a must win. We like using that term a whole lot. Because they're in. They're into the playoffs no matter what. So I think it's hard to say this is a must-win game or else because the season's not over. They will play next week. I do, however, for their psyche and for their positioning, I think they have to win. So maybe splitting those hairs a little bit again. But
well, I mean, what if they lose? They just played a 44-38 game. What if they lose 44-38? And then the Chargers lose in Vegas, which is very possible, and they still get to go to Houston. You'd feel worse about their chances?
No. I mean, I'm kind of going with the assumption that the favorites take care of business, I guess, in mm-hmm. those other games. That doesn't always happen. We know weird things happen in the final week of seasons where teams oddly blow games when they simply just have to win. If they end up in Houston by hook or by crook, I will feel good about the situation.
I'll feel okay about the situation. From what I saw, I thought C.J. Stroud, the last time I saw them play was against Baltimore. That was a highly competitive game where he looked like the Stroud of last year. I think he would give this secondary major problems.
Get a head start on 2025 with CNBC's Big January, the hottest tech event, CES, from Las Vegas. The data, the numbers, the jobs report, and meet the future of biotech and pharma at JPM Healthcare. Check out the Amex Golf Tournament from California, Inauguration Day, and the meeting of world leaders in Davos. Plus, the first Fed decision of the year. Get ahead of the game. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
All right, we're going to get into the George Pickens thing in the next hour because there's so much to get into. It's just so strange to me that people aren't on the same page with it, especially to me, of all of it, that Tomlin and Artie weren't on the same page. You had Tomlin emphatically. We just went back and listened to it. I guess I'm getting into it now, aren't I, Donnie? Welcome to a Donnie Football Friday. Yeah, what the hell? Let's get into it now. 50-minute mark on The Fan, brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram Route 19, Peters Township. I'm just stunned at how emphatic Tomlin was that Pickens did nothing wrong on that route last week that resulted in an interception. I don't think you have to know anything about football to see that and say, oh yeah, Pickens needed to run toward the end zone to draw the safety over, the safety who made the interception. It was obvious to Nate Burleson, who was on the call for Netflix, very obvious right away. Any former football player looking at that, and many have weighed in from T.O. to Burleson to Ben, saying, of course. I mean, it would be ridiculous for Pickens to do what he did, which was basically take a couple of steps and do nothing. If he had a short route, was he trying to get open on that short route? What did the play call for Pickens to do nothing? You'd have to be an idiot to believe that. So we have Tomlin right after the game, or maybe at his news conference a day later, or whenever it was, saying that had nothing to do with Pickens. And then we have Artie Smith asking about the route concept on that play, and he said, not that. Basically, why don't we listen to some various takes on this, Donnie?
Let's do it.
And then I want to get your take here on a Donnie Football Friday on the ongoing, what's the best word? Circus. The ongoing circus with George Pickens. I mean, it just gets so tiresome. Russell Wilson had a lot of responsibility. I agree with Batco from this morning. Ultimately, this was probably on Russ. You don't throw that ball. Then again, you have a split second and you're assuming that the guy on your left is going to do his job. And if he does his job, then the safety's absolutely going over to Pickens. Even though I think it was Reed himself, the chief safety, who said, no, I wasn't going to go over to Pickens on that play. Bull. Mm-hmm. Bull, you weren't. You're going to leave him one-on-one in the end zone? I don't think so. So let's listen to the different reactions since that play, that interception in the end zone. Limits, why don't you introduce each one and we'll listen to them and then talk.
First, here's Mike Tomlin on George Pickens' role on the Russ interception in the end zone.
Mike, on the interception that Russ threw against the Chiefs, it looked like maybe George broke off his route a little early. Was that the case? And how do you maybe assess the effectiveness of George's route running?
Not at all. George's route running had zero to do with that interception. George was fine last weekend or last Wednesday.
He went out of his way to be emphatic, and I think that brings up the old Shakespearean quote, "Methinks he doth protest too much," Donnie. He didn't need to be that emphatic. He knew that question was coming, and he was ready to go to the mattresses for his guy Pickens.
I hate to use the word babies, but he babies George Pickens a lot.
And he sure does.
He defends the hell out of the guy.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, that should make George Pickens feel good, but it also, what that does creates an enabling factor.
Do you think if you looked in the Steelers parking lot, you'd see Tomlin wheeling Pickens to the practice in a little what do they call it, stroller?
He might have his own parking spot too. At
George's
this point, right next
George's
to him.
Feeding times are listed on the Steelers chalkboard. I mean, come on. Something about that struck me as odd, especially when you juxtapose it limits with Artie Smith. After this was a days after, or at least a day after, Tomlin spoke. You just heard him. Artie Smith is asked here about the route concepts on that play. And you know what he's being asked is, did George do the right thing?
Right. So Arthur Smith, I thought the fascination of what he said was pretty interesting as well. Here it is.
On Russ's pick, what were the route concepts supposed to be? How was that play supposed to be?
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate the question. I'm sure asked a bunch, but not that. Lesson learned and you move on.
Not that, lesson learned and you move on. More than the play itself, Donnie, I'm struck by the disconnect between the head coach and the coordinator. First of all, why didn't Artie go along with the lie? And I think it was a lie, quite frankly. Why wouldn't he have known that and gone along with it? And should Tomlin have said, hey, you're asked about that George play, you know, run cover?
That is a little bit weird. Like, it's almost like he wasn't prepped. And we know that the PR team there does a very good job of that because they can tend to anticipate what will be asked, what the big talking points are.
Yeah.
So normally you get like the company punch.
Right.
That you get with an answer like that. So it's kind of odd because Tomlin, who we just said, he loves to go to the mat for Pickens time and time again. Really, any time that George Pickens gets brought up in a negative light, it is going to be defended by Mike Tomlin.
And to the hilt from his rookie year when he laughed at the idea of Pickens, who was then really a child in his rookie year, hadn't done really anything yet, exploding on the sidelines in Atlanta. And that was the first act of in-game babysitting we saw with George, where Cam Hayward had to take time for what he was doing to calm down this kid who had done nothing, who's screaming, get me the damn ball on the sidelines. And Tomlin defended him then, said he didn't think anything of it. You remember that?
Yeah. I mean, and the only thing it makes me question there, I mean, again, it is weird that they're not on the same page and like in lockstep with the team response
Artie and
they
Mike,
have towards
yeah.
it. But see, for Smith, I feel like it makes him look bad that the play ended up like that. And it's like, oh, well, they didn't follow the play.
Right. That's true.
They didn't follow the play that I drew up.
Well, do you think we're done there? No, we're not done there.
Not even close.
Let's hear from who's next here, Russell or George? Let's hear from Russell first, because that makes sense.
Were they on the same page, Russ?
Can you explain the concept? Were you counting on George to go vertical and carry that safety, or can you explain that for us?
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, he's going to go vertical, but, you know, at the end of the day, it can't happen, you know, on me. I was trying to give Pat a chance. You know, he's hadn't done such a good job for us down the red zone, and they made a good play.
Okay. So, again, the bigger picture here, what strikes me, Donnie, and the glasses are coming off again, is this idea of Mike Tomlin as the great communicator that we hear so often that's been espoused nationally with the Hard Knocks, right? The great communicator. Okay, they can't even get on the same page with this, the quarterback, the coach, and the coordinator, because the quarterback and the coordinator have now made liars of the coach, or is the coach making liars of them? I don't think so. I don't think Russ says he was supposed to go vertical if he wasn't supposed to go vertical. And I wonder how that bleeds into how that's emblematic of all the other communication issues. They can't get things right defensively on Tomlin's defense. They can't get it right. Communication errors every single week on the same concepts that they're going against that Minka just talked about yesterday. They're doing the same things. Teams are building off what teams did to us the previous week, and we still can't get it right. So I have to ask, even with this little, if you want to call this a little issue, the communication is so garbled and so disconnected that I have to ask the question, is that true on a larger scale with game plans and things like that? It sure looks like it on the field. So, you know, on one hand, you have a guy being espoused as the great communicator. On the other hand, you have all of us watching a team that can't communicate.
it should not look like this on January 3rd as you're entering the final week of the regular season. It should maybe look like this 4 months ago on September 3rd or, you know, whenever that first weekend of the season is, first couple of weeks, you can understand guys playing together for the first time. Maybe there's some communication that needs to get worked out. Things should not look like this or sound like it when you're this late into the year. And plus, I mean, we know it's Tomlin blowing smoke. He's admitted before that he lies in those pressers all
right,
the time.
Exactly. Just the fact that he was so emphatic about it. Like, when I asked him that the year Antonio Brown quit, Ed Bouchette told me on a show before the game over at the stadium, the Bengals game where Brown didn't play, wasn't there. I guess he showed up in the morning, was told to go home. He said, he's not injured. There's something bigger is happening here. So after the game, I asked Tomlin about it, and he gave a very evasive but sort of let's move on answer. Can we replay Tomlin? This was not an evasive move on answer. This was him telling the world emphatically that this was not on Pickens when we now have the coordinator, the quarterback, multiple ex-NFL players saying, of course it was on, of course George ran the wrong route here, or didn't run a route at all, just quit.
Mike, on the interception that Russ threw against the Chiefs, it looked like maybe George broke off his route a little early. Was that the case, and how do you maybe assess the effectiveness of George's route running?
Not at all. George's route running had zero to do with that interception. George was fine last weekend or last Wednesday.
Are you Brian? Are you Brian? This is pretty good. Are you Brian Batko's theory that Tomlin was doing that so the Steelers ultimately don't suppress, and that he does this in general with George, don't suppress his trade value, don't create the perception out there that he is a constant problem, that he quits on routes, that he does things like that? Do you think this is Tomlin, with the way he does this constantly, trying to negate that type of rep becoming George's national rep in the NFL?
Man, that's a point where when Tomlin would say, like, if he would be questioned about something like that, like what you brought up, and he would say he's more focused on what's happening in the here and now, like on the field, I mean, that would be some chess instead of checkers.
Sure would.
So that, see,
I'm not convinced of that,
yeah,
but it's an interesting theory.
I don't want to buy into that.
You don't
thought.
Want to bry into that.
Yes.
It's an interesting theory.
It
by
is.
Batko.
It is. But I can't get completely on board with, oh, he's been defending this guy for the last few years just so they can trade him.
I mean, again, so often it's Tomlin's national rep versus what I actually see happening. And the same is true of his star receivers. Oh, he's amazing with these guys. He's handled all these problems in Pittsburgh amazingly. I don't know. Has he? Let's go over that for a moment, shall we? Santonio Holmes, couldn't get him to change his ways. Tomlin lost him. They traded him. Antonio Brown, I would argue that Tomlin got the best of him, but he also enabled him to the point where Brown eventually quit. Tomlin lost him. They traded him. Chase Claypool, never got him to change. He only got worse while he was here. They lost him. He lost him. They traded him. Deontay Johnson, once he started to go downhill, Tomlin lost him. They traded him. Martavis Bryant, once he started to go downhill, Tomlin lost him. They traded him. So you're telling me that Pickens is going to break the mold, A, and B, does that speak to a coach who has communicated and kept problematic receivers under control? It speaks to the opposite. Call me crazy, but I just gave you five or six examples of guys going south, Tomlin unable to reel them in, completely losing them, and the organization trading them. And whether those were good or bad trades is immaterial to me. I'm talking about Tomlin's relationship with his star receivers, and he always seems to lose it in the end.
There's also an overcompensated amount of praise that he gets on the back end of those moves when the Steelers eventually move on from all of those guys you mentioned. And for pretty much every case there that you brought up, the guy does not do better elsewhere than what he did here. And it's almost like, oh, well, look what this guy got out of him. it started to completely unravel. His career very much unraveled at the end, and then the Steelers dumped him away. Smart move by the organization, but he gets so much praise on the back end when those guys go out and they just completely fall off a cliff, the career ends, whatever. He gets all the praise for it.
Right. And there, I think there is some truth to that. Like
he does, but if national people
want to phrase it like Tomlin gets the best out of these problematic receivers and then gets rid of them, but it's almost painted like, you know, he saves these guys. His, again, the great communicator, you know, he reels these guys in and they perform. Well, don't forget what they did toward the end. Like, yes, he got a lot out of them, but Chase Claypool was useless for a long time here, hurting the Steelers while Tomlin was coach. Okay. Deontay Johnson, the same. Antonio Brown, the same. He quit on him. You know, so...
It would be different if the roles
Martavis
were...
Martavis Bryant, the same.
Yeah, it would be different if the roles were reversed a little bit. Like, they brought in a guy who was problematic, and then he turned things around, and he had his best years here. That would make me think this guy truly does change these guys. Okay, so he's able to hold them in for a finite amount of time, but then at one point or another, they begin to unravel off the field and sometimes
point
on
is,
the field.
They unraveled here. He was unable to salvage them.
Yes.
And maybe while nobody
they
else.
Did, while they may have gotten their best football done here.
Yeah, I do, and I do give him some credit for that. I do give him some for that. A lot, I think, in AB's case. But this idea that these guys thrive, no, they all fell apart under him eventually. He was unable to salvage any of them. And when you get to when the story then gets to Pickens, why in the world would anybody believe that this guy at this point, and I've gone back and forth on this, I'll admit, is a good long-term financial investment? I guess you have to pick your number of years. Would it be worth it to get 2 good years out of George? One, because he's going south and Tomlin won't be able to stop it. That's really what I'm getting at, is that if you went out and asked the Jason Lockenfors and the Jay Glazers and the Michael Silvers of the world, hey, do you think Tomlin's the perfect coach for this guy? Do you think he'll be able to salvage Pickens and get it right? They would all say, oh, yeah, of course, he always does. Well, no, actually, they all go south under him, and Pickens will too.
What worries
me? The question
me,
is when.
Yeah, what worries me about the situation is that it is a little bit different, and we've had this discussion in the past when it comes to like what their decision should be with Pickens after the season, because they're getting to the point where they have to decide, is it extension time? Is it franchise tag time? Is it completely, you know, part ways? Is it a trade? Something like that. But they don't have the other option behind him
right,
that they normally did in all of those other situations, whether it be Ward, a young AB. They thought Juju would be the replacement for AB. They don't have that now.
Right. So let's get to the final element of this latest George situation. And that is George himself with Mr. Alan Saunders yesterday on a little interaction that made the rounds. And keep in mind, we have Tomlin saying George did nothing wrong. We have Artie saying George did something wrong, in so many words. We have Russell Wilson saying George did something wrong. We have Ben saying George did something wrong. We have multiple former NFL players saying George did something wrong. What did George have to say?
It seemed like you and Russ weren't on the same page in that interception against the Chiefs. How does that happen, and what do you guys do to address it?
You said me and Russ wasn't on the same page?
Yeah, well, that's what he said.
That's what he said?
Yeah.
Or is that what you said?
That's what he said. Yeah. How do you just address that?
Thank you.
All right, thanks, guys.
I've been there before, and this has become now, of course, a story of the media trying to stir it up. Was it the perfect question? Maybe not. Maybe it could have been a little straighter, like, hey, Russ says you're supposed to go vertical there. Mike Tomlin said you did nothing wrong. Arthur Smith said that that wasn't what you were supposed to do. What's the story, George? Like, what's your answer to all of that? I think some people think that seems like you weren't on the same page was a little bit looking for a gotcha. Now that I hear, you know, Alan said it seems like you weren't on the same page on that interception, that's just true.
Right.
Like if he had said, hey, you and Russ aren't on the same page these days, that would have been a real gotcha. In this case, he's just asking a normal question. It seems like you weren't on the same page. He probably should have said, pointed to others in his opening. You know what I mean? This is what Russ, Tomlin, Arthur Smith said. Tell us the story. What happened on that play? That would have been perfect, but that's in retrospect. I wasn't in the locker room. I never am anymore because of situations like this. And the outcry, I think, is mostly against Allen for the question.
Yeah, and a lot of people are jumping on him, and I think maybe George interpreted it the way that was that the exact phrase that Russell Wilson used? Because it wasn't. I mean, he didn't say word for word that we weren't on the same page. He just kind of painted the picture that they weren't on the same page.
Right. So I didn't have a problem in the end with the question. And I think George was kind of thrown off by the phrasing of the question and probably thought to himself, I'm going to get myself in hot water here. Forget it. I honestly don't really blame him for how he handled it. The question is what happened on the play still, however. And the bigger question is communication within those walls between the coach, the quarterback, the coordinator. But bigger than that, it was a miscommunication apparently on that play and all over the place on defense. So that little episode speaks to a larger question that may pertain to why this season is falling apart like a wet paper towel, Donnie.
Yeah, no matter what the level of football is, there should not be communication issues like this deep into a